Back in the day, photographs of everything, from a person to a house to some scenery, were all recorded on glass plates. This is just before the turn of the century, before we organised films. Everything had to be on glass plates, including that of the night sky. So our visions of the night sky were only in the sort of visible photographic graphic wavelengths. And we produced these plates, and it was a clever woman, Henrietta Leavitt, who looked at these plates one after the other, and was able to see that some of the stars were blinking on and off, sometimes hours, sometimes days, sometimes weeks, and the rate at which they were doing related to their power. So these blinking powers, winking at us, not twinkling, but winking, going on and off over a period of time, would tell us their power. It tells us the wattage of the star, and the wattage of the star compared to the wattage that we actually see tells us the distance. So if something is very bright but it actually appears to us as very dim, it means it's very, very far away. And all of a sudden our galaxy appeared from the starry sphere, exploded, and we had a galaxy amongst us. We looked at another little, what looked to be a little cigar-shaped object, which we were sure was in our galaxy. We looked at it, and it was even further away. Rather than tens of thousands of light years, this was 200,000 light years. This is a substantial distance away. That was Andromeda. And so our universe expanded from a sphere to a galaxy to local galaxies to galaxies far, far away. And the galaxies far, far away were getting redder and redder. And this is something which we teach our students called the Hubble effect, that galaxies further away are red-shifted. And we start to mention the Doppler shift, and we do a little sidetrack to explain the Doppler shift. But we're going to continue this. The further you go away, the more red it is. It becomes red, it becomes microwave, it becomes eventually microwave. And so the very start of time, which we can look back to around 380,000 years after the Big Bang, that's when the big fireball ceased, and the universe, the space we understood, the see-through space began, is down at the microwave, I think, 10 or 40 centimetres. It's around the infrared temperature or microwave temperature given off by a body, which is cold, very, very cold, almost unimaginably cold. I think 2.8 degrees Kelvin. I think helium is beginning to liquefy, hydrogen is liquefied by this time. It's very, very cold. It appears very cold to us. And there's a whole series of things. But at the cornerstone of this is teaching our kids about Doppler shift. Without Doppler shift, the rest of things don't make sense. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific and in the meantime add in a few teaching tips. And so for this point, we're going to discuss the Doppler shift, and I'm going to obviously cover a wide range of ideas from how you can practically teach it to some implications into the stars and get you really thinking about it. So this is perhaps a bit for students, and I would get a pen and paper out because I want to cover a little bit of maths to look at it. The Doppler shift. I have an object which is sending out a regular wave or a regular beat of light. And so each wavelength is equivalent to a beat. And so if I was to play a musical instrument, for instance, I would hear that musical instrument's tone changed compared to how fast it was travelling with respect to me. So there's been a famous Doppler recreation of a famous physics experiment, a physics thought experiment. A brass band has been put on a train, an old steam train, and played, and you can hear its pitch change. moving forward and actually artificially changing the pitch with a circuit, Kraftwerk has recreated the sensation of German cars going down a German Autobahn, going Autobahn, auto. I'm giving you the karaoke version for free. I think it goes Fahren, Fahren on the Autobahn. Of course, I'll spare you any more of that. I used to love that when I had built circuits which made that sound. I used to be able to reproduce it, and I suddenly heard the music, and it was just, this is what it's all about, the sort of the deconstruction of music into electronics, and the electronics not mimicking musical instruments, but being the musical instrument itself was fantastic with Kraftwerk. So we came up with our first idea that we have a source and a receiver, and the receiver receives different frequency or different beats depending on the relative motion of this source to the receiver. I suppose the first class demonstration would be to be a person to have one of these ping pong ball guns or a bag full of tennis balls, and the important thing is that the speed of the tennis balls and the ping pong balls must be the same in a medium. So in still air, if a source is moving, the speed of the pulse doesn't change as it goes through the air. So you're going to have to be a bit creative here, but you can show that it's easy to imagine that if you are walking to someone, forward to someone and throwing balls at them, as you're running towards them, the balls are going to catch up with each other and you're just going to pound them with balls, and obviously you'll arrive. If you're running away and throwing balls balls at them, obviously you're going to have to throw a bit faster, so the speed of the balls are the same, but essentially the balls will arrive more spaced out. That's something, the way that you can imagine it. And you can do a similar effect of dragging a long piece of paper, a paper towel, a texter, and the students moving up and down, and they at the same rate move, oscillate, moving towards or away away from you with the paper towel, obviously moving correctly. That's going to be a little bit difficult to get. It's obviously going to be a very quick and beautiful thing to do if you can actually demonstrate it. So if you have running water and a wave-making machine, and the correct amount of things, you can actually demonstrate this. Well, there's electronic demonstrations. Obviously, the sound demonstration is by far the most beautiful demonstration. Now, where I've heard it in nature, the most perfect one I've heard is when I was in Sweden. The air was really cold, and we were in a train passing. The train was moving, and we were moving towards a level crossing. You could hear the pitch increase and then just drop dramatically. And there's various things you can tell by doing that. I mentioned Kraftwerk. Listening, that's the most strong way. Obviously, asking students, you can get them to hear that if they've been to an F Formula One or things like that. And then we set about actually setting up a demonstration of it. And fortunately, nowadays we've got these beautiful, I think, Bose sound boxes, USB sound boxes, produces a beautiful sound of it. And you can just Bluetooth a sine wave to it, and you can actually hear dramatically at a fairly high pitch. If you're just holding the sound box and you just move it forward and back in your hand, and it's beautiful. Now, we're going to move on to working with the Doppler effect, and people really want to say Doppler effect speed, and obviously this is used, the Doppler effect is used by police radar and LIDAR to detect things coming towards and away from them. So you can see a speed of a car by looking at the Doppler shift of the radio wave, which, or microwave or light wave, which hits. So it keeps the same frequency coming towards you, but then the car coming to when the car is coming, bounces off coming towards you, it gives it that extra kick. The car is actually walking its way into the wave fronts and bending around more quickly than they're arriving. So if the car moves a meter in a second, it's actually covered an extra second of wave fronts into it, length of wave fronts, and that's bunched up. Now, I'm going to stop on that for a second and talk about the more fundamental idea of Doppler shift, which is often missed. At school, we want to say, oh, Doppler shift, it's in cars, it's in space, it's in galaxies far, far away. But another incredible thing happens if you think of the Doppler shift of your wristwatch. So if you have a wristwatch and you hold it up to your eye and then move it away from the eye, roughly a meter, it goes 3 nanoseconds into the past. And that is things which are further away from you. You measure the distance divided by the speed of light and you get the number of seconds into the past. So your wrist held at distance is 3 nanoseconds in the past, and you bring it towards you and it comes up into the present. And that ability and the light there to go into the past and go into the future, or come back to the present and always go into the past. You can never get into the future. You can only ever see into the past. This is all done on microscopic or incredible to understand Doppler shift. So even if you do it really slow, there's no special relativity happening in you. Nothing is travelling this even vaguely close to the speed of light. This Doppler effect really, really comes into play. And essentially, as you move forward, you catch up. Blue shifts and catches up sufficient numbers of wavefronts so your clock is on time. But as it moves away, it decreases in time. And this is a more fundamental understanding. You might be confused because it's not taught that way at school. People have never considered that. People don't talk about it. People might talk a little bit about Alpha Centauri being behind, or the moon from being 1.25 seconds behind, depending on how far or part of the orbit it's in. There may be all these discussions, but there's this lack of understanding that your hand is in the past. As you move it around, there must be Doppler shifts to account for it. Now, of course, this is very much the world of optical fibres and times. So if you're waiting for a signal to come to you, and we in Australia have to wait a few microseconds or milliseconds for data to come from the US. It's the speed of light coming to us. And now if I have my laptop and just walk over, start walking up from Sydney up to Northern Australia, across Papua New Guinea, get in a canoe, go up over Japan, the Straits of the Bering Islands, go down to Japan and actually arrive in San Francisco, that lag will disappear. And what's happened is there's been a slow Doppler shifting of my signal as I've come there. And if I walk away, it'll red Doppler shift. This is something to consider. And a lot of people teachers who haven't taught this will just throw that idea away. And obviously I'm putting in an extra idea to enrich your teaching. This is really the Einstein, I call it 0.0, whereas special relativity is 1.0 and general relativity is 2.0. There's various sets of general relativity, this is to do with space and Doppler shift. So even your hand moving is a Doppler shift. Now, I'm going to talk about constructing basic experiments. You can, we want to get a speaker and spin it around. Now, you can get a signal generator, hook it up to a speaker, and with the appropriate string, swing it around your head, and or swing it in the bag, and you can hear it move around your head in the bag. Now, with students, unfortunately, this is considered in Australia a dangerous thing. I think we've banned the way of teaching centripetal force, or the force which causes centripetal acceleration. I prefer to talk about that. A force which causes centripetal acceleration. You don't get concerned by having a stopper on a piece of string. You string it around your head, and you get different forces which you can measure. I think that is often banned due to the risk to students of the string breaking and the projectile hitting them. Obviously, there's going to be a danger if you do this with the Doppler effect. And there's only so much you can spin around. Now, the idea of a sine wave and a wave coming out, a beautiful pitch coming out, is, I suppose, easy to do, but you bear in mind that you do load up the students with a whole series of ideas, a signal source, wires, and various things. And of course, if you're spinning a set of wires, the wires will twist and it'll be a little bit complicated. It can twist and rotate if you've got a speaker doing it. There's a very good demonstration, perhaps a demonstration to see on YouTube. But what I want to do here is we're going to talk about actually mounting speakers on a bike wheel, that is, upending the bike. And you know that you can spin the bike wheel really quickly. Obviously, you're going to have glasses on for eye protection. I'm sorry to tell you all these types of things. But you can actually mount speakers in a bike. Obviously, keep fingers away, because you've got spokes and sort of disaster can affect. But if you've got a racing, a racer, a street bike, and you upend it and you push the pedals really high and just slowly gear up, have someone else gearing the bike up, you can pick up a fairly high speed just by ramming the or pushing the pedals. You can have someone there pushing it with their legs or with your hands, or several people working together if you've got a rod associated with it. Or look, there's various ways that you can hook it up. And of course, bikes can go 70, 100 kilometres an hour, and that's what I call wheel speed. If you can suddenly get your speaker to go 100 kilometres an hour by actually mounting it on the end of the bike, obviously not in a way that it'll stick out and actually sort of destroy. It's got to be, the speaker's got to be relatively small and placed in there. And this is where I think it's actually worthwhile to actually build a oscillator circuit. I just really have to, I would know. Oh, I suppose the way I do it nowadays is get a voltage frequency chip. You can buy one of those voltage frequency chips, and then a power amplifier, which has got an audio amplifier. There you go, an audio amplifier. Or in a device and get it to go to two speakers. This important thing is I want you to have two speakers on the bike. Now, that's one way with the there are chips and sort of. I think this is old technology chips. Definitely around in the 80s. I don't know nowadays how you could order these chips in. It's a bit much to get going. What's a purer thing to do is, and I can visualise it now because I built it a long time ago when I was a kid, a transistor, a couple of capacitors together in an oscillator. You've got a variable resistor in there, so you can tune the frequency of that, and you could tune it up to a tuning fork and listen for beats. This is great. So, thing, and you need to impedance match that by actually putting it on another little power amplifier transition. Now, I would say it would be actually rather hard nowadays to go into an electronics shop and actually buy the individual components. But it is well worth doing because people aren't going to learn any other way. And the delight when you see someone wire up a few components with soldering iron and what's going to happen. They look at, oscilloscopes are hard to come by now. There's digital oscilloscopes, little pocket digital oscilloscopes by Seed Electronics in China. Really great people to deal with. It's spelled S-E-E-E-D. Fantastic. Really easy to use digital oscilloscope. So they look like a mobile phone, but they're a fully functioning digital oscilloscope. Use that to build up your circuit, build your sine wave, and so it powers two speakers. So a battery. Therefore, you have a little battery. So you mount the battery on the axle of the bike and have weights, some blue tack and other things. Use cable ties because cable ties don't break. Don't use tape or anything else like that. And two speakers. Now, I could talk about design of speakers, so just get it oscillating. So on two ends of your bike, opposite from your valve 0 degrees, have one speaker at 90 and the other one at 270 on your bike, you can have your bike vertically upended, spinning at high speed, I've obviously done this not in a bike. Okay, I've done it with other apparatus, but it's well worth hearing. So having one and going even at high frequency, even at low speed, you'll hear it speed up as it comes towards you and go down as it goes around. So it goes, it'll have this like a siren effect, and you'll hear it high pitched for a while and then go to low pitch for a while, and we'll discuss that in a while. And if you have two of them, one will be going high pitch while the other one's going low pitch, so now we'll have two frequencies, and even at a fairly low rep rate you can actually hear, depending on the initial frequencies, it's a high frequency, a low speed rate, you can actually hear a pulsing or your head as your head moves around. So this is just absolutely physics on steroids. You can get so much out of this activity. As you speed it up, you'll hear a high pitch and a low pitch, really, if you've got two speakers going at the time, it'll be hard to hear. You'll hear what feels like some sort of beating. It's actually quite eerie to hear. I do recommend it. So if you've got the time, particularly if you're homeschooling, something like that, get the components together and build it. If you've got a bike, it's a worthwhile activity. It's something really hands-on Doppler shift. It sort of beats, there's various things you can do. You can have a speaker as a pendulum going back and forth. Look, there is a reason that I want to get here, is that this range of frequency, and you can have a microphone hooked into your digital stuff, you really have to frequency analyze it. And frequency analyzing is like taking the spectra of light. It's a long series of turns. The point I'm getting up to is that things in outer space spin. Galaxy spins, radio sources spin, a whole lot of spins, and the light. Yes, the light coming out of them has this Doppler effect. And it has a surface spectrum which is really... it's got a little bit of maths in it, but it's really easy to understand. So I'm going to step now away from Doppler effect. So this is one of these things where this talk has things for different people at different levels. So there's a different level of discussing what the Doppler shift is, and I'm not even going into Doppler shift formula. I'm just trying to remember what the form. There's a formula for the delta F. I think delta F on F equals V on delta V on V. Something really simple like that. I just have to look at just the memory. Oh, that's an important thing to do if you want people to get a frequency and come out with a relative speed. But what we're going down here is looking at the actual sound of a rotating star. So I can look at a star, and I can look at a spectrum, and this spectrum is equivalent to being able to hear the sound of its rotating. So you can hear something rotating, and we can see a star, and we can tell you, even though it's a dot, the light coming out of that is Doppler shifted. So say if it's rotating in a particular direction, the right hand of the star will be blue shifted, and the left hand side of the star will be red shifted. And we can tell so much things. We can even tell you then from that the shape of the star. And that's what I want to go to at the moment. It's maybe a bit in depth. So something rotating in the direction, the speed in your direction is, it's undergoing simple harmonic motion. So any point of that is coming towards and going away from you position-wise. Sine omega t, and then the differential of that is w cos omega t. So you've got a w. The differential gives you that, so the speed of that, and you have a radius in terms, or you'll have a radial term in there to start off with. And so you'll get an RW cos omega t differentiating. I think the differential of the sine is the cos when I last checked. So you'll have this effect, and so you'll know what the speed is. And so if you look at it, it will spend on average, just really blocky, it will spend approximation, that's a square wave, or it's not a triangular wave, it spends a lot of the time running towards you, and then a little bit then it's going across and spends times the other way. There's just a little bit of maths which you can do in your head, and I did it in looking at the Doppler effect of a nuclear source. And let's stop for a moment. Obviously, the higher purity your detector receiver is compared to your detector is, you can do amazing Doppler effect. And there's something called the Moss-Bauer effect, where you have a radioactive source in an iron rather than a nuclear. It's actually the nucleus is well bound into a crystal lattice, so the crystal itself, when it emits the radiation, recoils, and it fires with almost recoilless and receives almost recoilless. So in this process, you can use this and use this as a Doppler effect to detect nuclear radiation. There is this phenomenon where we have very finely tuned nuclear radiation, a finely tuned receiver, and we can actually see by nuclear radiation a Doppler effect of even just a few centimeters per second relative movement. I don't know what people use the Moss-Bauer effect, so look it up on the internet, the Moss-Bauer effect. And so I initially did the initial calculations for this, just basically in my head, and I'll guide you through in your head as well. So we've got this basically a sine curve of the velocity, so the maximum velocity towards you up the top on the y-axis, going plus V to minus V, and it's oscillating up and down. And if we speed it up, it will change velocity more, and that the height will change of that. Now, what we're about to do is tell you the average amount of time is at any particular velocity. So what you do is you get one cycle, you cut it off, and you spin it around. So velocity is on the x-axis and time is on the y-axis. And then, therefore, the amount of time per unit velocity, per differential step of velocity, is dt dv, which is the amount of time for a particular velocity or frequency shift, if you go through there, and putting it in there. So that's now, I suppose, taking a simple one, sine to the minus one, and you're trying to differentiate sine to the minus one. And if you're, I think there's a Cambridge cheat one, but if you've just learnt your calculus, you'll know that's a 1 on 1 minus x squared. And that means that if you have to plot a intensity of different velocities coming out, of Doppler shifts coming out, your for your bicycle wheel, what was an initial single spike will spread out into these two horns, a 1 on 1 minus x squared feature. So if you had an infinitely fine spacing, you'd have an infinite amount of time at the top, comparatively, of the radius at the angle coming towards him. So this is a 1 on 1 minus x squared, if you can draw that. So at plus or minus 1, it goes to infinity. In between, when x equals 0, it goes to 1. So if you can do that, this is sort of like a parallel shape. We won't look at do outside that value, and that is the shape of spectra that you see from a if we have a really oblate star going out, that is a star which is spinning so much it's about to fall apart. It looks like a spinning bike wheel. When we're out in space, we will suddenly see spectral lines from this, absorption lines and emission lines of that shape. And so we can look out in space and actually see spinning bike wheels. Now, I don't think I've actually gone and looked over some radio data and seen something very close to it. Now, if I have a ball, you can actually approximate that by imagining your stacked wheel, drop the diameter, emit, and drop the thickness of the wheel, and build up your emission source as stacked wheels rotating, and the Doppler shift drops as you drop to smaller r. But as you drop to smaller r, the actual width fills in, and all that means is, look, I could do the maths, and yeah, look, all that means is that your horns, it will fill in, and at a certain point, it will fill in, and where it's rotating sufficiently slowly, it'll fill in and go back to your spike. And so that dip, which dips down to one, will slowly fill in depending on the shape and the speed of rotation of your star. And so we can look at the star, see the separation of the two horns, gives you the spacing, and the way that you integrate up different a sphere is a integration of different tire widths, an addition of different tire widths at different radii. So at full radii, you've got the full largest tire widths, but at a very small radii, it corresponds to a small width of tire as you're going around. So it gives you the shape from outer space of your spinning object. Of course, this is, I suppose, one of the things that you can do if you if you've got the actual phone around your head, let the student spin the speaker around your head, they can actually hear the speed. They can actually hear the speed. And as they pull in, they're spinning it and they pull in the leads of the speaker and it comes close, it will actually spin fast. If you've played on some playground equipment, you'll have this Sydney effect, or the pirouette effect. You hear it spin faster. It will conserve its angular momentum, so velocity times the radius will give you the just have to remember if that's correct. It's I'm just trying to work out whether it's omega. You'll hear it spin fast, so you can actually hear this weird oscillation effect as you come in. For a single speaker going around, you'll hear it speed up as you go on. So that's a whole series of in-depth experiments to do with Doppler shifts, a whole series of things that people perhaps haven't thought of. Two aspects. One is the ordinary effect of a Doppler shift of someone just walking away from you. If they walk away from you, they're walking into your past and they're red Doppler shifting, but if they walk to you, towards you, they're blue, not due to the special relativity, blue to the fact that their number of wavelengths have got to catch up in time to reach you. That's a complicated thing that people don't know. You also have the spectra of rotating stars. So I can look up at a star, I can listen to star quakes on it, I can find out so much about it. I can see its radius, I can tell you so much about how far away it is, and I can also tell you if it's spinning. And look at the Doppler broadening of their line. I suppose that's why I don't know what triggered me to do this. I know this is a real rich topic, and I must admit, there's probably only two people I've ever had a deeper conversation about Doppler effect. I've had what I thought was going to be a deep conversation of someone who said they were understanding me, and then I just realised they weren't understanding a little bit. They were just pretending they understood. I don't know, that sounds awful, but David Jamieson, my honours, the scientist I worked with during my honours year, and there's a few people. There's one person at Parkes Radio Telescope when I was chatting with her about the data. And some of the people's mums were radio astronomers, and it was great to speak with them. Very enthusiastic about science. That's all I have to say about Doppler shifting. Thank you very much for listening, and in the meantime, keep on doing science.